Welcome to the serialized audiobook, Earthcore. Written by New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. Narrated by Ray Porter. Produced by Steve Rickyberg. Earthcore is also available in print as an ebook and as a full-length audiobook. If you want the whole story without waiting, grab one of these formats from the links at scottsigler.com/earthcore. Hello, junkies. How the hell are you? How is summer treating you? Summer is treating us wonderfully here at Empty Set. Comic-Con is in the rearview mirror. I am taking a much-deserved trip to Michigan. I'm going back for a class reunion, getting to see some people I haven't seen for many, 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 many years. And then, to cap that off, I'm doing a nice 3-day hangout time with all my high school buddies. I hear from a lot of people that they have not stayed in touch with people from high school. High school had its ups and downs for me, but my group of friends were just friggin' fantastic and awesome, and I get to hang out with all of them for a few days and go out and wreak some havoc. Now, of course, at my age, wreaking some havoc means basically having 2 glasses of scotch and then going to sleep before 11 o'clock so I can be up early at 6 and get to work. But that's wreaking havoc, and we're going to do it. In news that affects you directly, I am closing in on the completion of GFL Book 6's second draft. Yes, that is right. Almost done. I don't have any dates for you as far as releases, but at this point, this manuscript is in good enough shape that the second draft is our production draft. That means it gets sent to the secret agents who will check for biology, astronomy, general science, continuity, almost anything we can think of that they can go through and try and crack the code and find problems with it that then we will go back and fix. Which means one more draft, the third draft, and then we will put this bad boy into production, final production. Woohoo! No release date yet. Don't get crazy, but we are looking at sometime in 2019. Needless to say, we are excited. We've been waiting to bring you this book for a long friggin' time. I know you've been waiting for it for the same long friggin' time. But now, let's talk Earthcore, folks. Here we are with episode number 5. I hope you are digging it. It's quite fun listening to the episodes so I can write the story so far every week. Ray Porter's voice is all smooth and whatnot, and I'm pretty critical about myself, about what I write. And I was telling Ariel Grove, the director of Doom, that I listen to the episodes, hear Ray Porter read them, and I'm like, God damn, that guy can even make me think I wrote a good book. So he sounds wonderful. Speaking of the story so far, let's get you caught up on this book, and then we are going to bubble some toil and some trouble. Previously on Earthcore. Connell Kirkland wants the dirt on Sonny McGinnis, a prospector who has quite possibly found the most valuable metal deposit ever discovered. To get that dirt, he needs info from the one person who knows Sonny better than anyone, metallurgist Herbert Darker, who's analyzed Sonny's finds for decades. To get that info from Herbert, Connell has enlisted the services of Kayla Myers, former NSA agent who specializes in retrieving information by any means necessary. And now, Earthcore, episode number 5.
Kayla sat and waited. The park took up a full city block. She'd parked the white cargo van along the curb under some trees that grew up from between the sidewalk and the street. Thick branches and plenty of leaves provided a nice, shady overhang. It made for an ideal spot. A public place. 4 lanes of traffic. Businesses on the other side of the street. Pretty safe, right? That's what Darker would think. Public is only public if someone is looking. Connie Browning had rented this van. Kayla liked her Connie character, a little dirtier than Miriam, a little sluttier and weaker, an important thing with most men. She checked her makeup in the rearview mirror. She used her fingers to tease out her blonde hair a little more, giving it volume, letting it hang past her shoulders. Connie preferred heavy eyeliner, fake lashes, and thick, colorful shadow. Never red lipstick for Connie. Too traditional. Dark pink. That was how Connie rolled. Despite snagging only a catnap on the flight out from D.C., Kayla had to admit she still looked damn good, if she did say so herself. The bags under her eyes showed through the makeup, but only slightly. 5 years ago, a little concealer and boom, no problem. 5 years ago, though, her age had still started with the number 2. It was getting harder to look young. Soon, maybe, she'd have to permanently move her cast of characters into MILF land. For now, though, the great distractors would see her through. She unbuttoned an extra button on her shirt, angled the mirror down to see the results. Black lace bra, barely visible, but visible. The girls on display. Yeah, that would do it. As long as Herbert wasn't secretly gay. And even then, he'd still have a hard time not looking. Sonny McGinnis might have nothing to hide, but Herbie had a closet full of financial skeletons. He'd pulled in $210,000 from Connell, one rat out at a time. If the IRS discovered that unreported sum, Herbert would be looking at prison time. If she was going to come up with something on McGinnis, she'd have to fabricate it. Darker was the only person who could help her do that on such short notice. At this early hour, there was plenty of open parking along the curb. A black Cadillac drove up into the space behind her. Jesus, he wasn't even bright enough to park a ways away and slowly walk up. Maybe take a look around as he did. Just more proof of that old adage, book smarts and street smarts are two different things. In the van's driver's side mirror, she watched him get out. 5'5", maybe 140 pounds, all the muscle of a Dachau victim. No visible weapons, poor coordination, an easy mark. He walked up onto the sidewalk and waited. Kayla slid off her seat, smoothing her cotton skirt as she did. She adjusted her purse. She was never without a bag, although this one was smaller than she usually carried. Enough room for the essentials. Lipstick and mascara, IDs, Springfield XDS 9mm, a compact to check said lipstick and mascara, Strider SNG knife, a granola bar in case she got hungry. The usual stuff for the girl on the go. And, of course, her three signature tools of the trade that she never left home without. Kayla opened the van's sliding side door and stepped out. The 3-inch heels on her black pumps slid into the grass, but only a little. She saw Herbert's eyes widen. She couldn't blame him. The skirt barely hung below her ass, showing off strong legs. With the pumps, she stood at 6'2", towering over him. Darker stared at her face. Then, as predictable as the sun rising in the morning, his gaze drifted down to her tits. The great distractors were doing their job.
"Thank you for coming," she said. "I wasn't sure if you would."
Connie had a wavering voice, kind of a girl just off the bus from the farm thing. Truth be told, it was very close to the way Kayla had sounded back when she'd first left home, when she'd left Daddy and her sisters. With some effort, Herbert looked her in the eyes again.
"I have a message for Kirkland," he said. "You tell that asshole he crossed the line when you called my home."
So tough this one was. She wondered if he'd have that brave voice if Kirkland were standing here instead of her. Of course not. If he were facing a man, Darker would be wheedling and whining, but not for a woman. Oh, hell no. Kayla glanced across the park. A few new moms with strollers sitting and talking, but far enough away they weren't paying attention to anything but themselves. A few homeless people camped out, lost in their own worlds. A weekday, so no school kids.
"He made me do this," she said. "You have to believe me, he's an awful person."
The look in Herbert's eyes showed he instantly, desperately wanted to believe that. Women who looked like her weren't supposed to be bad people.
You didn't sound like this on the phone, he said.
I'm sorry about that. I had to get you out here. I didn't want your family to see, you know? I'm just doing you a favor, pal. I'm really on your side.
Darker crossed his arms.
So, what is it you supposedly have on me, anyway?
Kayla gestured to a cardboard file box sitting on the van's empty floor.
Some paperwork or something, she said. He told me you'd know what it was.
Darker took a step closer. He leaned forward, still wary, and peeked into the van.
Close enough, dumbass. Here, let me get it for you, she said.
She bent at the waist, reached in for the box. So predictable, he took another step closer, ready to help her in case the box was too heavy. She lifted the cardboard lid. There wasn't any paperwork inside. It held other things, things she needed for this job. She reached in and grabbed the taser. Herbert's eyes widened slightly, but before he had time to run or call out in surprise, 10,000 volts coursed through his body. Kayla watched him shudder and jerk. She cut the power. He fell forward. With practiced ease, she caught him on the way down, flipped his short, light body over her shoulder. She tossed him into the van, jumped in after him, and slid the door shut. Bagging him had taken maybe 3 seconds. 3 silent seconds. She quickly rolled Darker onto his stomach. From her purse, she pulled the first of her favorite things, a small spool of thin copper wire. She used it to tie his hands and feet behind his back. He started to moan, already recovering. He'd be yelling for help within seconds. Fortunately, her purse contained the second of her favorite things. She pinched his cheeks, forcing his mouth open wide enough for the ball gag to fit. He seemed confused, trying to pull his hands and kick his feet as she buckled the leather strap behind his head.
"You can scream if you want," she said. "I don't mind."
Kayla slid into the driver's seat and gunned the engine, smoothly pulling away from the curb and down the street. The homeless people didn't even look up. What was another car or van or truck to them? The mothers remained focused on their strollers and on each other. A public place. Safe, right? Still, you didn't hang around for something like this. For the next step, she needed privacy. They drove. Herbert started mumbling. The words seemed incomprehensible through the ball gag, but Kayla had done this before.
"You want to know where I'm taking you, sugar? Somewhere we can be alone. Got to ask you a few questions."
He mumbled louder. Sounded like begging. "Already? Kind of early for that, but to each their own." While she didn't know Salt Lake City, she'd scouted the area before setting up the meeting. A vacant factory sat less than a 2 minutes' drive from the park. She pulled into the empty, weed-choked parking lot and drove behind the building, out of sight from the road. It wasn't a great hiding place, but she only planned on a 15-minute encounter. She killed the engine. Time to get to work. There was still one more favorite thing in her purse. Herbert wasn't going to like that one. Not at all. Kayla slid out of the seat. She squatted in front of him, knees wide, her fingertips gently stroking her inner thighs. He stared, bug-eyed, head cranked up uncomfortably so he could see what was in front of him. He had probably jacked off 1,000 times to visions of a woman that looked like Connie, but Kayla was pretty sure none of Herbert's fantasies involved him kidnapped and tied up with copper wire. She guessed. Anyway, you never knew with men. Spit already coated the rubber ball. Snot dripped from his nose. His eyes teared up. A little blood trickled from his left wrist where the wire had cut into the skin.
"You and I are going to have a little conversation," Kayla said.
She reached out, tenderly stroked his hair.
"I need information from you. If you're good, I'll let you go. If you're not, I'll kill you."
He said something, shouted it really, but the red ball blocked his words. Kayla slid around behind him and straddled his back, resting her crotch on his ass. She reached into her purse and pulled out a pair of rust-speckled pliers. She could, of course, afford to buy new pliers, but these had sentimental value. Back when the NSA still looked upon her as a fair-haired child, she'd put the pliers to good use in Honduras, Kuwait,
Paris, Afghanistan, even in D.C. once. She couldn't think of her old job without thinking of her old boss. Andre Vogel, NSA director, had sacrificed her for political gain, made her a scapegoat in order to advance his career. If it had been a man involved in the Janata incident, would Vogel have reacted differently? Of course he would have.
"We'll make an example of you," he'd said. "You're no longer NSA material," he'd said.
All bullshit. Vogel found a way to get rid of her because her continued success and unfailing patriotism undermined his control. If it hadn't been for Janata, he would have created some other fabrication. She had loved the NSA. God, how she had loved it. She'd made it her life. And now she put her pliers to use in the private sector. Not for God, not for country, but for money. It was so unfair. Her life felt so empty. But still, a girl's gotta pay the bills. She knew the pliers, knew every nook and cranny, every rust spot, every scratch. The engraved words, "Kmart Drop Forged Japan," showed on the handle. The tips were good for things like ripping lips off of faces or pulling tongues from throats. The pliers' best feature, though, if she did say so herself, were the four pointed teeth just behind the tip. The teeth let you get good grip on nuts and bolts. They also happen to fit nicely around fingers, around knuckles, to be precise. She slid the cool pliers around the last knuckle of Herbert's right pinky. Without a word, she squeezed with practiced strength. A loud crunching sound ripped through the van, like a tree branch breaking under the weight of wet snow. Herbert Darker threw his head back and screamed. His thrashing sent a tingling jolt through her body. Her skin felt electric, so sensitive she could feel her skirt sliding across her thighs. She felt that tingle building down there. He was more of a turn-on than she'd thought he would be. Herbert pulled at his restraints, but the wire only dug further into his skin. He stopped moving. He kept screaming, though. His body trembled with fear. Her breathing came in short, shallow pants. She felt her blood coursing through her body. Kayla stroked Herbert's hair. He sounded loud, but she knew from experience that such screams were practically inaudible outside the van. He cried. He mumbled. Sounded pathetic. It sounded delicious. The tingling's intensity built slowly, steadily. He repeated a single syllable over and over again.
"Why?"
Kayla said, echoing his question as she slid the pliers down his pinky to the next knuckle.
"I'll tell you soon enough, sweet thing."
With a snarling smile and a sigh of passion, she squeezed the pliers until she heard the crack. Herbert thrashed his head. His throat-tearing screams filled the van. He wiggled. Yes, he wiggled in just the right way, in just the right places. She moved the pliers down to the pinky's base knuckle. That one was always the best, always took the most strength to break, always made them scream the most. Herbert finally started to fight, to jerk and kick. God, could he be any sexier?
"That's it,"
Kayla said, feeling the tingle turn into a buzz, strong and building fast.
"That's it. Let me see you fight. Don't let me do it to you. Give Mama some sunshine,"
he cried, begged, thrashed, wiggling this way and that, trying in vain to throw off her weight. The way he moved, the buzz started to overtake her, growing in her head as well as down below. She tried to lock the pliers on his knuckle, but her hands seemed to lose strength, lose coordination. He screamed, and when he did, she screamed with him. The pliers slid from her fingers, clattered against metal. She breathed in deeply, body rejoicing in it after suffering through so many short, tiny breaths. The buzzing in her head slowed, settled. The only sound was his steady whimper, still muffled by the ball gag. Kayla opened her eyes.
"That wasn't so bad, was it?"
She unwrapped the wire from his wrists, rolled him over like a limp rag doll. He tried for her throat, but one grab and shake of his broken, swollen pinky ended all thoughts of resistance. As his face screwed into a mask of agony, she calmly rewrapped the wire, binding his hands over his stomach. Tears and snot streaked his face. Bleary eyes gazed up with mindless incomprehension. In less than 15 minutes, he'd gone from a meeting in a sunny park to a helpless torture victim. She straddled him again, then reached down and unsnapped the ball gag. It popped from his mouth and hung off his left cheekbone, a thick strand of spit running from the rubber to his lower lip.
"Please stop," he said. "Please."
Kayla stroked his hair, used her thumb to gently wipe the tears from his eyes.
"I need some dirt on Sonny McGinnis."
Herbert's face, confused, disbelieving.
"I need to blackmail him,"
Kayla said.
"I know you've got something I can use."
"Use? Blackmail? I don't know anything, like..."
"You'd better come up with something,"
Kayla said sweetly.
"Or I'll start in on your ring finger next."
Sobs racked his voice, each word following a sharp, snot-filled intake of breath.
"You crazy fucking bitch!"
Kayla picked up the pliers, held them in front of his face so he couldn't help but look at them. His crying ceased.
"Hold on a second," he said. "Just give me a second, okay? I've got something, I swear."
Kayla waited, letting Herbert think. She watched him blink furiously as if his eyelids were mental speedometers.
"Okay, okay, okay," he said in a rush. "There was this mine a few years ago, the Jorgensen mine. Sonny discovered it and sold it, but it went bust. You could say he knew it would run dry, but he sold it anyway."
Herbert babbled for several minutes, the sound of a broken man begging for his life. His subservient tone caressed Kayla, adding to the energy still simmering through her body. She pulled a notebook from the file box, scribbling down the information, smiling the whole time.
"That's exactly what I needed," she said. "Now, I want something else. Whatever Sonny found, people are all fired up about it. Tell me everything you know about his latest discovery."
Herbert talked. He talked so fast she had to make him go back and repeat things. One phrase in particular he repeated over and over. $1 billion find. "Oh, Connell, something like that floating around out there and you only pay a girl triple her normal rate?" Kayla placed the notebook back in the box. When she finished with Herbie, she'd research the Jorgensen mine, find all the relevant details. Connell would get the information he wanted and get it by his ridiculous deadline.
"Damn, girl, you're good."
She stroked his hair one more time, then slid into the driver's seat. The white van pulled away from the empty factory. Kayla parked behind Herbert's Cadillac, then cut the copper wire around his wrists and feet. She handed him a white towel to clean up the blood. Aside from the broken pinky, he had only minor cuts on his wrist. All in all, it was a pretty clean job, one that wouldn't draw an ounce of suspicion when Herbert went to the doctor and made up some excuse for the damage to his finger. True to her word, she hadn't put anybody in a wheelchair. She opened the van and helped him out. His shoulders slumped. His head hung low. He reminded her of an old balloon, saggy and half-deflated. This was the true essence of any man.
"I'm letting you go," she said. "You're going to keep your trap shut. If you don't, the IRS will be the last of your worries, because I'll come for your sons."
Herbert's head snapped up, pain suddenly forgotten. The spark of defiance back in his eyes. Perhaps there was a backbone in there after all.
"That's right,"
Kayla said.
"Let's just say little Tommy and little Lukey will never play the violin again."
She slowly opened and closed her pliers. The metal squeaked like a baby bird calling for food.
"You understand me, Herbie?"
He nodded quickly. She always threatened the kids. They were better than the wife or the husband. You never knew who would actually prefer their spouse tortured and dead. Threaten the children, though, and people listen. In 10 years using that theory, she'd only had to keep her promise once. She knew fuck all about mining, but she knew the word billion. A big word, a big number. She needed to find out more. Maybe there was a way for her to get a little piece of the action. Because even a little piece of a billion was pretty damn big. Another bar, another negotiation, but this one so different from the two spoke. That place had been a dirty, broken-down dive. Well-worn was a better way to put it. This place, the wood walls didn't have any scratches or dents from someone's head being thunked into them. The leather chairs were padded and looked brand new, and they were teal. Teal leather, for fuck's sake. The Gibson Lounge had all the personality of a fake tit. That's what you got for a hotel lounge. The last time Sonny had drunk, he'd really enjoyed the company. Dennis the Deadhead was good people. This time, Sonny wished he'd brought his gun. He'd heard about Kirkland, sure, but never met him. Spooky eyes, gray and hollow. He looked at you like a Doberman looks at a T-bone. And he was much younger than Sonny had expected. The older Sonny got, the more irritated he was with young men doing well in his field. Made no sense. He'd been quite successful himself as a youth, and older men had hated him for it. But it was what it was.
"I do thank you for seeing me on such short notice," Kirkland said. "I'm sure you have quite an agenda lined up."
They sat in comfortable chairs, yes, teal, and spoke to each other over a small, knee-high marble table. Kirkland sipped his bourbon, on the rocks even, like some kind of pansy. Sonny couldn't remember what kind of bourbon it was exactly, and he didn't give a shit. He didn't give a shit about any liquor save for his favorite, Old Overholt.
"Got people I want to talk to, if that's what you mean," Sonny said.
He took a sip of his own drink, felt the pleasant burn.
"So let's get to getting."
Sonny had expected someone in a suit, the stuffy kind, the boardroom kind. If that was Kirkland's true nature, he wasn't showing it here. Dark gray sport coat over a blue button-down shirt, jeans, and well-worn cowboy boots that gleamed despite years of obvious use. His leather briefcase sat on the table between them. Kirkland drained his glass. He nodded at Sonny's.
"You want another? You trying to get me drunk? Think that's going to make this easier for you?"
"Mr. McGinnis, if it comes to a drinking contest, anyone in this bar could beat me. I've had a long day, and I want another drink. You want one or not?"
Sonny stared at those gray eyes, tried to get the feel of the man. Skinny, but not that skinny. Looked like the kind of asshole that ran 5 miles every day just for the sake of running.
"Sure," Sonny said. He polished off his drink.
When the bartender brought over the second round, Kirkland raised ice clinky bourbon.
"To your find," he said, "and to hopes of doing business together?"
Kirkland waited for Sonny to clink glasses. Sonny did not. Kirkland shrugged, took a sip. Maybe Sonny wasn't mad at Kirkland. Maybe he was just mad, his mood fouled by Herbert's apparent betrayal. Greed. Always gumming up the gears. That was the very reason Sonny hid his finds and always had his samples tested at the same place. Apparently that strategy had paid off. If Sonny had given Herbert the find's location, Kirkland and his company would already be greasing the local politicians and buying up property rights. Sonny had gone looking for Herbert. Hadn't found him. Herbert's office said he'd called in sick. Fall at home or something. How convenient.
"Interesting that you know of that find, Mr. Kirkland. I haven't told many people about it. How do you come across it?"
Connell stared hard for a moment. Gray eyes. Dead eyes.
"Let's cut the bullshit, Mr. McGinnis. I'm not going to play games with you, and I hope you're not going to play them with me. You know damn well where I got the information. How you handle that is up to you. I really don't care. The important thing is that I know of your find. I want it, and I want it before anyone else finds out about it. Kirkland's abruptness surprised Sonny. Company men were usually smiles and compliments and bullshit. This guy was all business. He struck Sonny as the kind of man who'd sell his own mother to a Bangkok whorehouse if she could turn a regular profit.
What we want and what we can have are often two different things, Sonny said. And what you want will be expensive.
How expensive? Sonny took another sip of rye. Still delicious. Still perfect. But the second glass never tasted quite as good as the first.
You want me to make the first offer, Sonny said. Read that in some negotiating book, did you? Well, college boy, let's light this candle. I'll take $15 million up front, and 20% of the net for the first 10 years.
Kirkland smiled. There was no real humor in it. Wow, Mr. McGinnis. Only a decade's worth of the profits?
I'm feeling generous, Sonny said. Because I'm old, and who knows if I'll be around in another 10. And I get full accounting access all day, every day, not just quarterly. Someone so much as steals a Sharpie from the mine supply cabinet, I want to know I wasn't born yesterday.
No, but your cheeks have that rosy glow of youth.
Fuck you, Sonny said. You should be so lucky to get as old as I am. That's my offer. Take it or leave it.
Kirkland stared. He stared some more. Sonny felt uncomfortable. It was okay, though, because that was how these bossy fucknuts operated. Something about embracing silence or some horse shit like that, waiting for the other guy to stammer and yammer to fill the space. Like Sonny was going to lower his offer just because this emotional zombie kept his trap shut? Hardly.
Pricey, Kirkland said finally. No shit, Sonny said. And if you keep putting them long sentences together, I'm going to have to go fetch a notebook and a dictionary.
Another smile, a cold one, but Sonny thought maybe he detected a tiny bit of sincerity in that one, a glimmer of an actual sense of humor. Then it was gone. The gray eyes once again held sway.
Perhaps if you owned the land and the mineral rights, we'd play with that number, Kirkland said. You own neither.
Oh, is that right?
That's right, Kirkland said.
Mr. McGinnis, I know everything that you own. You don't own any mining properties. The 79 Vet sounds bitchin', though. Sweet ride.
How did he know about the Corvette?
Just what the fuck was going on? Maybe Sonny hadn't been mad at Kirkland before, but he was now.
Negotiation is over, shitbird. You've been snooping around in my private business.
When I want what you've got, your business is my business, Kirkland said. You don't own the land. If you try to get it, we'll outbid you instantly, and you'll be left with dick. Let's not bother talking about claim jumping and other legalities, because this is the game, and you're already playing it. Since our relationship has been so delightful right out of the blocks, I'll make a counteroffer. We'll give you $1 million for the location. No back end. You take your mill and you walk the fuck away so I don't have to look at your wrinkly old ass ever again.
Sonny stared. Not for effect, like Kirkland, but rather because he had no idea how to react. He was the one with the location. He was the one holding all the cards. Didn't this guy realize that? Sonny wanted to flip this asshole off and walk out, but he wanted to put him in his place even more.
You listen to me, you little fuck. You want to play tough? I'll go to a dozen other companies with what I've found and start a bidding war that will make you bend over, grab your ankles, and beg me to fuck your ass if I give you the original price. I figured you'd counteroffer, but since you didn't, it's $15 million and that's that. Someone is going to write me that check. If that's not you, tough shit, Think you can swing your big imaginary cock around and I'll just fall to my knees and beg to gobble it down? I've been handling people like you since before you was an itch in your daddy's little pecker.
Kirkland sipped at his bourbon, pansy-ass ice cubes swirling and clinking as he did.
Mr. McGinnis, you've never dealt with someone like me.
Sure, Sonny wanted to put this arrogant pup in his place, but it was beyond even that now. There were only two options left to Sonny. Leave that very moment, or shove his glass right into that emotionless face.
Fuck you, Sonny said. The only person who will know the location is the one who pays the most money. So your lawyer friends won't have any chance to jump the claim. And you know what? Now that I think about it, I bet you don't make it to my age. I hope you die of dick cancer first.
He stood up, drained his drink, and set it down hard enough on the table to draw a look from everyone else in the shitty fake lounge. Kirkland opened his briefcase, pulled out a piece of paper.
Before you go, Mr. McGinnis, there's something you should see.
Whatever it is, I don't care.
Kirkland's eyebrows rose. He nodded slightly.
I see. Well, do you care about being sued into the Stone Age? Losing your house, that pitiful excuse of a savings account, and I'm sorry to say that classic Corvette?
He held the paper up by one corner, rattled it.
You'll see that your friend Mr. Darker was very helpful to us. You sold a location to the Jorgensen Cooperative. You know, the one that netted you a half a mil. The one that went bust when the initial high-grade ore gave out after only a month of mining.
Sonny stood there, unable to turn away. He felt eyes on him. Other people in the lounge glancing his way, wondering why he was standing there with his fists clenched. He wished he'd brought two guns.
I don't guarantee my fines,
he said, forcing himself to speak quietly, slowly.
Everybody knows I get paid for a location and only a location. What happens at that location isn't my problem.
He had been doing business that way for 25 years. Some fines panned out, some didn't. He was always exceedingly clear about what he was selling. Sonny knew he was in the right, both legally and morally, so why did he have such a sinking feeling about that bullshit piece of paper?
I'm sure you're as pure as the driven snow, Kirkland said.
He gave the paper another small rattle.
But this statement, provided by a man who has known you for 16 years, I might add, says that you knew the vein was small and that the ore grade was too low to be profitable beyond the first 100,000 tons. According to him, you had full knowledge the find was a total lemon, yet you sold it anyway, for far more than it was worth.
Sonny hadn't wanted to hit someone this bad in a long, long time. He'd been in the business most of his life. He'd never had anyone try to strong-arm him like this before. It infuriated him. It terrified him. Could Earthcore really get away with this?
I didn't know any such thing, he said. Herbert Darker is a lying son of a bitch, and when I find him, I'm going to take this out of his hide. The ore I found near the surface was very rich.
The ore that Herbert analyzed, Sonny couldn't forget.
The Jorgensen people did their own analysis. They agreed with my findings, and that's why they bought the location.
Kirkland let the paper drop to the table. It slid a little, stuck on a bead of water that had fallen from the outside of Sonny's glass.
That's not what Mr. Darker will state in court, Kirkland said. And after I pass this information to my friend at Jorgensen, Bob Kitchum worked for Earthcore before moving on. We used to play golf together. Great guy. You will definitely be in court.
He leaned back in his chair, took another slow sip. All the while, those wax museum eyes of his stared. Sonny knew he had to calm down. He couldn't think straight. These motherfuckers were stealing his find. Stealing it. Sonny's jaw felt tight. He was shaking. If he'd been 20 years younger, he'd have come right over that table and hit Kirkland, and hit him again and again. Kirkland gestured to Sonny's chair.
Please have a seat. We can work this out. I've got the upper hand, but that doesn't mean you're not going to get paid.
Sonny knew he shouldn't have taken this meeting. He shouldn't have assumed he could use Kirkland to find out about Herbert's actions. He should have got on the first plane out of SLC and gone where he couldn't be found. He hadn't done any of those things. Instead, he'd walked right into this, blind, without a shred of research or preparation. He didn't know what to do, so he sat. Kirkland signaled for the bartender to bring another round, then leaned forward, elbows on knees.
"I'm not going to use this on you unless you force my hand," he said. "We both know Darker's statement is bullshit, but that doesn't matter. It wasn't just the purchase price. Jorgensen shelled out millions for equipment and labor."
He tapped the piece of paper.
"If they get this, they'll come after you with both barrels blazing. Maybe they'll win a suit against you, maybe not. But the best you can hope for is to spend money you don't currently have on lawyers. The worst you can hope for? With Darker's testimony and with your record, you could wind up in jail."
The concept of prison brought the situation home. Sonny would do anything rather than risk another stint, locked away from open skies and sprawling landscapes.
"Why are you doing this to me?"
The bartender dropped down two fresh drinks, took away the two empty glasses. Sonny didn't think Kirkland's ice cube looked all that pansy anymore.
"Because I can't afford to let you put this on the open market," he said. "It's that simple. I want what you have. I don't have the money to buy it, so I found another way."
He made it sound so simple, so basic, so primitive, so cutthroat.
"Mr. McGinnis, we both know your demand of $15 million was ridiculous."
Sonny picked up his drink. He drained it. He didn't taste any of it.
"It was," he said. "Not as ridiculous as $1 million, though."
Kirkland nodded.
"True, true, since we've established that Earth Corps is going to get the claim, we..."
He stopped, raised one eyebrow.
"We have established that, have we not?"
Sonny wanted to say something smart. He wanted to insult this prick. Instead, he simply nodded. As his mother had always told him, a smart man knows when he's whooped.
"Good,"
Kirkland said.
"Here's what I think we should do. $1 million up front for you, cash, no obligation, and 2% of revenue. For life. To be passed on to your heirs or whatever charity you choose. And that's 2% gross, not net. So we won't be able to cut you out by shuffling the numbers around to make it look like we're losing money."
Sonny didn't understand what was happening. This wasn't some pity offer. It was generous. He'd pulled the 20% number out of his ass just to be a dick, really. 2% of the mine's profit? For life? If there was any size to that find, any size at all, that percentage would wind up making $15 million look like Monopoly money. Sonny could wind up being rich beyond his wildest dreams. And he was a man that didn't dream small.
"What's the catch, Kirkland?"
"Catch?"
"You've got my balls in a vice,"
Sonny said.
"You could just take the damn thing and cut me out altogether, so there has to be a reason for this sweetheart deal."
Kirkland sipped, nodded.
"Ah, that catch. Of course. Well, the million is yours. No strings. But to get that 2%, I need you on site for the next year. That will give us time to probe and figure out the best place to begin. You found it. You know the area. Having you there saves me time and money."
Sonny's anger faded, pushed aside by a creeping sensation the same feeling he'd had on that mountain. If he wanted to get rich, he'd have to go back. Go back and stay. Stay for a year in the place that felt like a funeral.
Mr. McGinnis, this is a good deal. You know it is. I want this to be a success. I think I need you there for that to happen. So I got the better of you this time, so what? Forget it and join me.
Kirkland again held up his glass.
What do you say, Sonny? Let's get rich.
Sonny McGinnis felt overwhelmed, completely confused. He'd just gotten his ass kicked, sure, but wound up with one hell of an upside. And maybe he was getting tired of going into the mountains all by himself. The lone wolf act was great for a young man. He wasn't a young man anymore, not even close. He clinked Kirkland's glass.
I'm in.
Kirkland grinned. When he did, his eyes crinkled. Well, what do you know? There was an actual human being in there, after all. The two men finished their drinks. Then they finished another. An hour later, and drunk off his ass, Sonny stumbled back to his room. Hotel lounges sucked, but they did offer a proximity advantage when you were so crocked you could barely walk. He dropped into bed without even taking off his clothes. He fell asleep almost immediately. Almost. Before the blackness claimed him, he had a brief realization. He was going back. Back to that lifeless place where animals had the good sense not to tread.
That was Earthcore episode number 5. Sonny McGinnis and Connell Cutthroat Kirkland are now officially in business together. One has to wonder how that will turn out for Sonny. We will begin to see how that plays out next week when Sonny makes a new best pal. And Sonny will have to face up to his primal fear of a certain peak in the Wawa range. He will have to live and work on Funeral Mountain. We will be back next week with episode number 6 of Earthcore. And until then, we will talk to you all real soon. You have been listening to Earthcore, written by Scott Sigler, read by Ray Porter, produced by Steve Rickyberg. Copyright 2017 by Empty Set Entertainment. All rights reserved. Theme music is by the band Amps and Volts.